Welcome to the Desert Voices podcast. We are about critical thinking to promote well-being. Are you looking for a podcast about human nature, communication skill building, and spirituality? Then this podcast is for you. We are boldly resourcing the spiritual quest toward integrative living to flourish personally, professionally, and collectively. You save time and energy with these educational podcasts designed to help us better understand human nature, build up our communication skills, and ground ourselves spiritually. Join our host, culture coach, mystic, scholar, and theologian. Shalene is drawn to all things wild, free, majestic, and mysterious, with a mission to help people thrive, bringing their whole selves to personal and professional spaces. Let's get curious, let's get bold.
Okay, off script, this may or may not be an episode. I just like talking to you. So let's do our polo thing since we're on this now. Tell me about, I was really interested in your political conversation this morning, and I'm really interested in the feminist response, the ones that we had talked about when we poloed back and forth that question for a friend. What's on your mind? Give me like 10 minutes of something you want to shoot around together.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with the conversation you had this morning with your friend saying, well, we don't yet know if it's a genocide. Like, let's just slow down. And your question of what does it do for you to put a label or not put a label on it? Like, what is holding you back from having compassion for this situation or for being able to have eyes to see the situation for what it is? And for me, what comes up is historically how that always happens. You know, you painted a really, really good picture in the conversation we just had of how it just feels better inside of us somehow to be able to look back at history and say that was evil. If I were there, I would have reacted some kind of way when that's not how you react now. I mean, even the creation of Palestine was in 1948. It's not like this is not new. It's not like all of a sudden people are talking about this. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, every civil rights leader that I can think of has warned us about Palestine. Every indigenous activist now is right there, lock in step, because they know exactly what it's like for the indigenous population to be occupied and oppressed and slaughtered. And I just don't know. I want to know neurologically, why is it that some of us have eyes to see it and say, let's stand up right now? And then why do some of us just ignore all of the facts and all of the evidence in front of us? I think it has something to do with self-preservation.
Yeah. I don't know all the neuroscience on that because I don't know that we've actually done, I haven't actually seen any studies around that exact idea, but I have studied a lot about the autonomic nervous system and correlating a bit of it with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? The safety, belonging, and dignity. And so basically the theory, and I think this is more fact than theory, but the idea that everything we do to meet one of our basic human needs of safety, belonging, and dignity. And by that means our autonomic nervous system, that we are constantly trying to regulate our autonomic nervous system, which means we'll talk more about the polyvagal theory and all that in other episodes. But think of it a little bit like the 30-second down and dirty polyvagal. Your body is, you have a ladder in your body. So to speak, it's called your autonomic ladder. The top of your ladder is that ventral vagal. It's the place where you feel safe and connected, curious, compassionate. Middle of your ladder, sympathetic nervous system. It's the place of activation or mobilization. When your body picks up cues of danger, it mobilizes, fight, flight, or freeze, or fight, flight, or fawn. And then the freeze response is that dorsal vagal, the bottom of the ladder. That's that collapsing in on yourself, hopelessness. The bodies, all of our bodies move up and down this ladder, you know, innumerable amounts during the day, countless times. But back to this point is, I think that when we say the word genocide, it activates our sympathetic nervous system because the energy of it it puts us in the middle of our ladder pretty quickly. And that's not a comfortable place to be, right? Like being in the middle of your ladder, fight, flight, or fawn, is this, it's picking, your body's picking up on cues of danger, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to move. Whenever your body picks up in cues on danger, you will have a reaction to it. Mm-hmm. You do not have the option not to. And so interestingly, I don't presume to know what was going on in my friend, but I can tell you, as we were talking about it, both of us immediately dropped to the middle of our ladder. And that I turned into fight mode. Like my dukes were up. I was like, I'm ready to punch you out, motherfucker. Like, let's go. And they're like, why can't we just have a calm conversation about this? I'm like, because you're a fucking asshole. Clearly, I've talked to my friends like this. It's fine. I'm in therapy also. But the point I'm trying to make here is I was activated by the word genocide, and so was my friend.
But on different sides.
But in different ways. So I was in fight mode and my friend was in fawn mode. Appease the danger. Mm-hmm. Reason with the danger. Try to be like, well, it's not really genocide. I'm going to fight the genocide. And I watched my friend's activation, their response, their trauma response. It was really, to me, of course, I'm not them. So this is me projecting what I felt. They would have to speak for themselves. But to me, it looked very much like a fawn response. Like, well, I need to have more details. I'm going to reason this through. It was a very like rational, meaning let's go up to our head and talk about the numbers. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that, it's that very Cartesian of us, that Descartes era, where we prioritize the mind over the body, and the body is a feeling center. Mm-hmm. And so most of us don't want to feel what genocide feels like. And so a fawn response to it would be to put our bodies into fawn mode, or to it's a disembodied response. So you would disconnect from the feelings of being activated that genocide would evoke in you. And then you would go up to your mind and try to rationalize it.
Do you know what it's coming up for me as you're saying that? I think about how people would talk about civil rights, and that if you weren't living in, well, even if you were living in the midst of an area that was like a hot area, so like where desegregation was, we're actively trying to desegregate our schools. And I think a lot of times people would say, it's not that bad. Like, they don't have it that bad. It's not slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is
that exact response.
Yes. And so to name that, that's a fawn response. That's appease the danger, rationalize the danger, do whatever you can do to distance yourself and not have to feel it.
And you only have the ability to do that when it's not you in danger.
Right.
Or people that look like you, right? It's easy for marginalized people to recognize the impression, the oppression of others, because we recognize it in ourselves. But if you have never been a member of an oppressed group, or you don't see yourself as a member of an oppressed group, and the people being oppressed seem to have nothing in common with you, I think fawn response is a lot quicker.
Yeah, but yes. And you see this in sexual violence all the time, or sexual abuse. A lot of women who have been sexually abused would say it wasn't that bad. Mm. Or especially when it becomes like childhood sexual abuse, there's a lot of rationalization that happens. Mm. And that also is, so even if it is you, your body still might disembody, disconnect, and fawn or rationalize said trauma so that it doesn't feel as devastating and detrimental as what it is.
Yeah. And can I just switch gears like just a little bit, because it just reminds me of a conversation we had before too about the way people react when they feel very much that their job is to attack anti-Semitism. Arguments come up. And I think a lot of our responses come out of a secondhand trauma space.
Yeah, you've mentioned this. Will you say more about that?
Mm-hmm, I
will. Describe a little bit about what that is.
Yes. So secondhand trauma is when you experience the trauma of someone else that you're able to empathize with. And there is a part of your body, a part of your brain that doesn't have the ability to recognize that what's being done to someone else isn't being done to you. Your empathy is so great that you also feel the trauma. Mm-hmm. And it puts you in a space of, I mean, I'm looking for another word besides trauma, but you're extremely stressed. And so you're at the bottom of your ladder. All of your reactions are bottom of your ladder. I'm just going to do a really quick example. I have a very close friend who survived the Rwandan genocide. And she, every spring, has the memory of that come back to her body. And there was a year that she shared with me, and she would call me at all times during the day to speak her trauma. I was just one of the people she felt safe with to speak it. And I didn't really have a background in trauma-informed therapy. I'm not a therapist. I'm just a good listener. And after a few weeks, I didn't know what was happening to me. I was so overwhelmed. And the moment it hit me, I was in a drive-through line. And it was like the radio was on and the kids were talking. And I just wanted to cry trying to order like the Chick-fil-A. And it felt like every bird that was chirping was also in my car. Like every one of my senses was completely overwhelmed. And I went home and I talked to my good friend Brandy about this. And she's a trauma-informed worker. And she said, oh, what you're experiencing is secondhand trauma. Mm-hmm. And you don't actually
have a name, right?
Children, and you're not having a panic attack. You're all of your senses are overwhelmed because you are living this woman's trauma with her. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of tools to get out of it. But if you were watching the events of October 7th and you sympathize at all with Israeli citizens, which we should, everybody should feel horrible when an atrocity happens to another human being. Maybe some of the conversations that you're having are happening in this high stress place in your body, and you don't even have the ability to recognize it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful, because I think I respond in secondhand trauma too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you can't make wise decisions. You can't mm-hmm. parse out nuance. That's one of the things that goes out the window when you're in mm-hmm. the midst of secondhand trauma is nuance. You cannot see nuance.
Yeah. And that's actually exactly what I did with my friend today, is I kept saying, I was speaking in superlatives or definitives, all or never, this or that, like it's exactly like this, or it's all of that. And I think that also was something that was frustrating to them. They were like, how do I, like, mm-hmm. it's not exactly, you know? And so they were wanting to rationalize and parse out. And yeah, that's a really, that's a really important thing. So I think one of the takeaways here is to know your autonomic nervous system, mm-hmm. which you're in the right place. We know a lot about that. We can help you.
Yeah. And it's not like, when I say self-care, I don't mean like bubble baths, but like actually like taking care of yourself mm-hmm. and being able to take yourself up the ladder, mm-hmm. knowing what tools and tips and tricks are useful for bringing your parasympathetic nervous system right in order.
Yep. Yep. You're parasympathetic and sympathetic. So really good. I watched the Dr. Gabor Maté, not a debate, but a discussion.
Yeah.
He is a genius with a rabbi who is a Zionist rabbi. And so it was really interesting to have watched. It was all Israeli people, all Jewish people on the, and the moderator was Jewish. Obviously Dr. Gabor Maté is Jewish and the rabbi is Jewish, and they were having a conversation, and the rabbi and Dr. Maté have very different views. Dr. Maté is very much wanting a ceasefire, very much wanting what is happening to the Palestinian people to come to an end. And the rabbi, as a Zionist, was we have to do this in order to protect ourselves as a Jewish nation. And the reason I'm bringing this up, and I'll post this, I'll post the link. I really encourage you to watch it, because it was very fascinating. There was a moment where, not a moment, but a long discussion actually, where all of them, the moderator included, you could see so quickly the energy shifted, where they all were in the middle of their ladder. Their sympathetic nervous system kicked in. They were in fight, flight, fawn mode. And I was so grateful. I watched Dr. Maté, who's one of the people I study this under, although I'd love to be his pupil, but you know, I'm his more like his like academic stalker. So how's that?
Yes. But our mentors don't need to actually mentor us in person.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good point. He's my mentor. He'll never know my name, but he is my mentor. But I watched him in real life. You could tell he was getting activated. The moderator had said something that was not actually neutral, and he called her on it. He goes, so you have now moved from a neutral position to an advocating position. That's something that you said you wouldn't do. And it was how you framed the question. And he helped her see the way you frame the question is not actually neutral. It's an advocating position. So now we have two against one, which was what we all agreed we weren't going to do. He was upset. She was upset. The rabbi was upset. And Dr. Matei goes, you know what? I just actually need a minute. I need a minute and I just need to breathe. Can I take a pause here?
Wow.
And it was so beautiful to watch him in real time do the very thing he's taught me to do. And that was to regulate your nervous system. And the quickest way to do that is through your breath. Your breath is what's called the ventral vagal break. It's the thing that can reconnect you to the top of your ladder quicker than anything else. And so I watched him call that out, pause, regulate his own system, give his other, I don't know what you would call it, participants time to regulate their nervous systems. And then he went back into the conversation. And that I tried, my friend and I actually did try to do that. We both regulated this morning. We went into separate rooms. And then we came back, and that was actually really helpful because it was like, we just need a break.
It is.
And then we came back, we were able to reengage in a healthier way again on the conversation. And so,
and that's a whole, I keep saying this to you, that's a whole sermon right there. I just don't believe in non-starters. I don't believe that there's anything that we can't talk about. We just have to regulate ourselves in the process.
Yeah.
There's no issue that's so hot we just cannot discuss it. There can't be. We have to be able to use diplomatic process to work through really big problems and really big issues. And that's a beautiful example of that. Like, hey, let's go into separate rooms for a minute.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We need a break. We put ourselves in timeout.
Yeah. And it should be said that also you're both very far removed from actual danger.
That's exactly right. I am not in the middle of bombings.
Yeah.
I am not being actively starved. And that's actually one of the most horrifying things of trauma is you get stuck. You get habitually stuck or chronically stuck in your sympathetic nervous system. You get stuck in the middle of your ladder in a highly activated state or in a collapse, a state of collapse. And those are actually degenerative states. They act, and this is epigenetics. This is when your environment affects you on a cellular level and shortens your life.
Yeah. And we know from what the Doctors Without Borders are reporting from Gaza right now that the children, and this is prior to October 7th, the children living in Gaza were self-harming, were having suicidal ideation. And now the doctors are reporting that the children say they would rather die than live in Gaza. I've seen a couple of videos that were just heartbreaking of children that had developed tics and like self-soothing techniques because they are so traumatized.
Yeah.
They're in grief with really no way to process it, no one to help process grief.
Yeah.
It's layer upon layer of just horror.
Mm-hmm. So we're getting close to our 20 minutes and we are ending yet again at the middle to bottom of our ladders of, and part of it is, don't turn away. Don't turn away. This feels like it's so deep and it's so heavy and it's so sorrowful. And I get that these last two episodes have certainly not been pick me ups. However, this is what it means to bear witness to something. And Jill, if you could just end with that. One of the things I've learned so much from you and your abolitionist educational ways, you've said to me, I will not turn away. Mm-hmm. And you said something really fascinating about white people wanting something to be done fast, and then we forget. So maybe you could end with us just educating us a bit on that, and then how do we stay in the game? How do we stay, whether we are white or non-white, whatever, but how do we continue to bear witness to the sufferings of the world?
We develop stamina and we force ourselves to bear witness. If we're, you know, you and I are living in Scottsdale, we have mountains and mountains of privilege. And sometimes it feels like that the very least we can do is bear witness to the stories that are happening. I think we owe humanity a service to hear the stories, learn them, internalize them, and carry them with us. And we can't do that if we're not taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. You have to take care of yourself, and you have to take care of your community and each other. And then we just have to realize there's no quick fixes, and we don't have to look very far in the past to mm-hmm. have great examples of people who have run the race with perseverance, who have run it well, and have shown us how to resist and still have joy and still live in community and lift each other up and live the best lives possible.
Amen. Pastor Jill, preach. Well, I'm really grateful to get to be on this sorrowful journey of bearing witness with you. And this is not the first atrocity we've seen together. It will not be the last in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. But it certainly is a defining one. So yeah, for any of you joining our conversation, we're grateful you're here. We love you. We care for you. Our hope is that you are learning alongside of us. We're hoping that this is critical thinking that cultivates and promotes well-being for all humankind. And it doesn't mean that it's easy. And so as we all learn to regulate our nervous systems, there'll be a lot of talk on that going forward. And Jill and I will just keep bringing whatever resources we have to the table. So Jill, would you feel comfortable offering a prayer, or a hope, what would you feel most comfortable as we close this out to, or even sing? You have the best voice in the world, Jill. When you sing to me on Marco Polo, I like feel it in my bones.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to me. I'm not prepared to sing, but I can offer a prayer. I don't have a master's in divinity. Nobody asks me to pray out loud very often, but I'm happy to offer a prayer. I'm just going to take a breath first. Oh God, as I just fill my lungs with the air that you provide, I am so grateful. I am so grateful that you chose me to be alive at this time. And I am grateful for my soft heart and for my hard spine. And I pray that for everyone listening to my voice right now, that you would open up our hearts, open up our eyes, and open up our minds to see humanity, to see sometimes the brutality of humanity, and to see the beauty of humanity. And I just pray that you would continue to put in each of us a spark, an inspiration, and show us how we can be a light in this dark, dark world. Help us to see the divinity in each other, each and every one of your beautiful children. Help us to see the divinity. Help us to see people exactly how you created them. Help us to throw off the darkness of the enemy and give us strength to catch the pebbles, to catch the arrows. God, I know you are with the weary. You have told us that you sit with the suffering, the forgotten. And I just ask that you give us strength to do the same, to follow you right into the depths of hell, to provide relief and love and comfort, and help us to love like we are made of it, because we are. Oh, in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. I love you, friend.
I love you too. Thank you.
Thank you for joining the conversation today and choosing to spend your valuable time with us. We hope you walk away inspired to critically think and actively promote well-being. If you enjoyed this episode and want to get more of these conversations sent directly to your inbox, head over to desertvoices.com and subscribe to our email list, and always get updated when a new episode is released. If this episode was helpful to you, leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Follow us on social media at @DesertVoices_. We are most active on Instagram. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Would you consider a tax-deductible gift or supporting us on Patreon? Information is on our website at desertvoices.com. And lastly, in the spirit of transformation, our team at Desert Voices reserves the right to evolve, grow, change our minds, and make many, many, many mistakes along the way. We invite you to do the same. Enjoy the desert spaces. Go, be free, flourish.